Welcome to the Heart Matters Podcast with your host, Ibn Leon. Join us as we explore the intricacies of spirituality and self-improvement. Gain a fresh perspective on enhancing your spiritual, emotional, and mental well-being through the fusion of spirituality and self-improvement. Enjoy Ibn's engaging conversations with guests from diverse backgrounds. They share unique perspectives on personal growth and holistic health. From spiritual leaders to relationship experts, entrepreneurs to creatives, each episode delivers knowledge and inspiration. Tune in to the Heart Matters Podcast for profound conversations and practical advice, empowering you to live your best life. Chapter 5, Inspiring Stories. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Heart Matters Podcast. I am your host, relationship coach Lewis Morris. Know that the vessel can only pour out that which it contains. Therefore, it is upon us to put into the heart that which is beneficial so that it can emanate through the rest of our lives so that we can gain those people and things that will benefit us. I have another smart and focused guest on today. Not that I ever have guests that aren't smart, because I always do. Yeah. Ms. Leah Brown is here. She is the owner of Haven Consulting LLC. She has an MBA and an MED in sexuality education. She is also a board certified coach, health coach practitioner, motivational speaker, facilitator, and podcaster. Haven Consulting is a health, wellness, and sexuality education firm focused on empowering individuals through education and advocacy. As a human sexuality educator, Leah uses her multiple platforms to transform the lives of others. Her passion for education is only viable by her determination to change the lives of others by offering them hope and the audacity to pursue their purpose. Welcome, Leah Brown, to the Heart Matters, everyone. How are you, Leah? Is everything all right?
Yes, I'm superlative today. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're superlative. Okay, well, all right. Well, let's talk about that then before we get into anything else. Okay, so what is superlative about this day here?
Superlative is about where God has placed me and where I just am in this moment in space and time. I'm blessed because although I have my youngest son has COVID, he is doing very well. He is not exhibiting any symptoms, and this is his second week of the illness. And I am just so thankful because he is not in my care. He is away and in the care of my brother who has no children. So I'm doing very well. So he's my brother's experiment today. And I'm just thankful that he's doing well.
Wow.
Out there. Yeah. That's hard for me to relinquish as a mother.
I'm sure it is. So, okay. Yes. Well, why did you make the decision to relinquish?
So my brother has a business. He has a business where he does high-end installations for multi-million dollar companies and people. So my son is apprenticed to him. So he's out there learning the business and how business flows in with respect to what my brother does. So he's been out there for 6 weeks. I have two sons and one daughter, and they all have life-threatening food allergies, and they're all anaphylaxis level. So that does not make them a candidate for vaccinations. So he's out there, everyone around him was vaccinated, but he is not. So he shows me his rapid COVID test a few days ago, and it's positive, and he had already been exhibiting signs last week. So I can't bring him home because my other son's not vaccinated, and he just poses a threat. However, my brother doesn't have any children and his wife is in Italy. So that's really good. So he gets to convalesce over there. And I'm just thankful that my brother's already had COVID. He's vaccinated and he has no fear. He's like, he's fine over here. And I'm like, great. So we took up some things that he needed because he's about an hour away from me as well. So there's a lot of elements going on and I'm just so thankful that he is doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why he's up there. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the business.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about Haven Consulting LLC. Okay. Why did you start the business? What was this about?
So the catalyst for my business was my children's illnesses, right? So throughout my life, I've suffered with eating disorders, bulimia, anorexia, body dysmorphia, which is when you see your body as something that it's not. So you look in the mirror, you see you might be a 95-pound woman or individual, and you see yourself as a maybe 150, 180. So it's a very disillusioned view of yourself, right? So I've always had that. So when my children got sick, I had to learn how to heal them with food, because no longer could I use food as a weapon. I had to use it to heal. So I'm like, well, how am I going to do this? So I went to school to become a board certified holistic health coach practitioner. And I'm certified through the American Association of Drugless Practitioners. So some people get online and they're like, oh, I've got a health coach degree. Yeah, you did something online for a day, right? So I did a 2-year training. So I just qualify that because everyone wants to say they're a health coach. Everyone wants to have that title, but there needs to be some level of credibility and acumen behind that. So that's why I say that. So when I learned to do that, I had to learn that food had to heal, right? And I had to heal my children. I had to heal my own self. I had to heal my mind. And haven means safe space, right? Respite, a place where you can go to get healing and what you need. So that's where the name Haven came in, right? And then when I spoke to my clients, oftentimes it was never about food. There was always some underlying underpinning issue that was pervasive that I couldn't speak to their health and wellness, because there was always some sexual trauma or some sexual issue that was kind of, like I said, underpinning everything that was going on with them. So I'm like, I have to be able to speak to this, right? I have to be able to speak to the needs of my people with a certain level of credibility. So I went back to school to get my degree in human sexuality. But prior to that, I'd already gone back to school, like, yes, I want to rule the world. I have to get an MBA, you know, because I already had a degree in management. So my thought is I just wanted to rule the world, right? But there were other plans for me. So that's how my business came about.
Okay. All right. So let's unpack a little bit of that. Okay. So what was this, bulimia and anorexic thing going on? How did this come about, and how did you realize that you had a problem two problems that you needed to deal with?
So that's an excellent question. So I've always been thin. And when I say thin, I'm talking like a 0, a 2, like thin, right? But I have muscular structure. So I was able to, you know, kind of not look like that. But anyway, when I was growing up, I'm 44. That was back in the Kate Moss, the skinny models, you know, and everybody, you had to be too thin to win, right? You couldn't be too rich or too thin. So my cohort of friends, we thought it was just as sport. We just did that, right? We wanted to manipulate our bodies and look like whatever we wanted to look like. But what I realized was because I had been sexually abused, right? And I had been raped and different things that happened to me, that was a means by which I utilized to control what I had no control over previously. So I had adopted that methodology to control what my body looked like, because that was my own autonomy, right? So if I wasn't starving myself, that was the anorexia, then I was taking large doses of laxatives. I would literally lose 10 to 12 pounds in a week. And I'm a size 2, I need to be a size 0, or I need to be a 00, right? So that's why I was doing that. And I even did that up until my 30s, my late 30s. I recall finding out I was pregnant and I still took diet pills. Like, I don't care. I'm going to be as small as I can possibly be. And like when my children were born and I had gained so much weight, I lost weight so rapidly after having my children, that the doctor wanted to test my thyroid. But he didn't know I was literally starving myself. So I would eat half a piece of bread, half a piece of cheese, like, and it was all whole wheat, fat free. And I lost, like I said, 50 pounds in like 3 weeks. So that's nuts. And I'm not talking water weight, I'm talking fat. So when I was doing this, I of course let my doctor test my thyroid. I didn't want him to know what I was doing, but I eventually had to let him know, like, listen, I have a problem. So, you know, he worked with me and I went and got, you know, help that I needed. I didn't go to a treatment center, but once I got through therapy and different things and learned what the triggers were and what it was that caused me to go down those roads, you know, admittance, right? And then once you admit that you have an issue, then you can seek the healing that you need and be open and receptive to what that may look like for you. Because it may not look like what it looks like for me, may not be what it looks like for someone else. So, yeah, it's crazy, well, right?
Wow. Okay, hold up. Well, let's stay, because I, you know, no, I'm serious.
I love it.
You know, we want to try to give people some information. So that if they're going through something like that or that, they know what to do. They know what steps to take. All right. So I just want to let me go to your husband, because you were married at the time, weren't you?
Yes.
Okay. So how did he deal with all this? What was his take, and how was he supportive of what you needed to do?
So we have been together for years. And he knew me in my teenage years. So I remember even starving myself then. And he would tell my friends, he would say, "Can you please tell Leah to stop losing weight? Because I don't have a black suit." So in that, he was saying, if I have to bury her, I don't have a black suit to wear. So can you please tell her to stop losing weight? Can you please help her? So I was not listening. I did not care. I look fabulous. I look great, right? And I remember my cheekbones being so gaunt. And I would just take my hair, like put it over my cheeks, and I'd laugh about it. I'm like, I look great. No, you didn't. You look like a crazy crackhead, Leah, like in retrospect, you know, but there was healing that needed to take place. So I did not recognize that. And when you're in something, it's hard for you to really see. You don't have that perspective that you need unless someone else is able to look at you, identify that, and then you even take what they say and you're receptive to that, right? So it wasn't until I had my second son, and I remember breastfeeding him. I was breastfeeding, and I only did it to lose weight, right? So I'm breastfeeding and I cared about him, don't get me wrong. But it was a great way to lose weight. And I remember losing weight so rapidly that what I didn't realize, the wake up was for me, one of the wake ups was that when you are breastfeeding and you lose weight so quickly, toxins are released in your fat, right? And breast milk is a lot, it's water, but it's also fat. So guess where the toxins were going that were being so rapidly released from my body into my breast milk and into my son. Right. So when I found that out, that was kind of a slap in the head. Like, what are you doing? Like, now what you're doing is affecting others. My husband just kind of was scared. He didn't know what to do because it had been so pervasive, right? Through our whole time together. So he was just like, I don't know what to do. So he was kind of hands off with it. Like, you look beautiful. Please don't do that, you know? And I'm like, you're such a liar. I can't believe what you say, because I gained a pound and you didn't even call me out on it. Like, I don't trust you in that way. So really suspicious of his sincerity of heart when he would express how he felt that I looked. So
wow.
Kind of crazy. Yeah, kind of crazy.
Okay. All right. So how long have you two been? I saw something on Instagram where you two have been together, what, 21 years or something like this here?
29 years.
Wow. Okay. So you've been married all that time?
We've been married for 17 years. So we dated on and off in high school, right? So since I was 16, and like I said, I'm 44, but we've been married for 17 years. And all of my children are by him, 23, 16, 14. So we've had a long road together. So he knows me very well.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's talk about the sexuality educator. Okay. Because, you know, I want to get the backstory on that as well. How did this come about? Why did you want to do that? Why did you feel the need to go back to school or to go and study about human sexuality?
Interesting. So all of my life, I've been that person that people come up to me unsolicited and just unload on me about sexual stuff. And I've always been that kind of person. I can give you an answer and I won't make you feel judged. I won't make you feel uncomfortable. I just know that that was a gift of mine, right? And when my girlfriend approached me, she said, "You know what? You're crazy, but you're crazy in a good way. And what you've been through, you know, your sexual abuse, your rapes and different things like that," she said, "you would be an excellent individual who could really speak to other people and help to educate them." And I'm like, she's like, "There's a degree." Now, I want you guys to understand that a master's in human sexuality education is only offered in 3 schools in the United States. Okay. So it's not a popular degree, right? It's at Widener University in Pennsylvania. It's at Berkeley, I believe, or UCLA. I'm not sure. And I'm not quite sure of the other school. So for a woman of color, right, to be in that position, it gives me a unique strategy in which I can speak to many people across multiple disciplines, across multiple ethnicities, and I have their ear, right? So I do it because I want to free people. I got to that point because I know that I wish I had had someone to speak to me, someone to speak to that unhealed person, that person who needed information, that person who needed grace, that person who needed someone to give them hope and help and empowerment and advocacy and all the things that I wanted to someone to be to me. I knew that if I got the education and the acumen, I would be able to speak to people, and it would go across color lines, across financial, socioeconomic lines, and really to just bring people. So I call myself like the sexual Sojourner Truth, you know, the sexual Harriet Tubman. I'm bringing everyone out of freedom and we're going to have a ball. But it's more to the point of helping people to understand that, you know, you do have a right to sexual pleasure. You do have a right to feel whole, and you do have a right to be informed about your own sexuality and your own rights. So I'm very passionate about it.
Okay. All right. So when these people started, you know, coming to you, when did this start? You know, when you were like, you know, 11 or 12?
Yeah.
How old were you in a year?
I want to say 9 or 10. People are talking to me about masturbation and all kinds of stuff, telling me that they like girls, telling me they like girls, and boys telling me they like boys. And anyone who may be LGBTQAI+, they always just let loose on me. I'll see a man walking down the street and he'll be like, "Hey, girl." And I'll be like, "Hey, girl." You know, they just know that I'm a safe space. Like, I'm not judging you. I'm going to love on you because I'm looking at your heart, not what you're manifesting in front of me, but your heart. And your heart is good, or even if it's not, you know, that's where I am with it. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. We could do this all day, but okay. You know.
All right. So did you look at that as strange, you know, the people coming to you talking about this stuff at such an early age? What was your thinking? What were you thinking at like 9 or 10, you know?
I'm thinking, I masturbate. So, you know, I got this thing kind of down pat. So let's talk about it. And at that time I was heavy in being sexually abused. So I'm like, I know a little bit more than I should. So let's talk about it. You know, I didn't communicate that out, but people would be open to talking about it. I'm talking about people my age. I'm talking about cousins, you know, friends and that type of thing at that particular age. I came into puberty early and it was obvious, right? Because I'm 70 pounds with C-cups, right? So I was little, right? So, but I was much, my body was speaking other things, right? So it also drew the attention of older men, of people who should not have been trying to solicit me, right? But it did. And I had to learn on the fly. I had to learn a lot of things. I love to read. I love to educate myself. I didn't want that street knowledge. I wanted what was real, what was true. So I sought that out and I had the knowledge base, the precursor, the cursory knowledge, let's say, of sexuality as I went along because I educated myself. Isn't that weird? I was a little weirdo. I was weird. I said it.
I didn't say anything.
You didn't have to.
I didn't say anything. I was just listening. All right, so when after you get your degree, after you get your degree in human sexuality, when did you decide you were going to start talking to people about this? When did you start thinking, okay, well, I'm going to make this into something where I can help people and, you know, make a living at it at the same time? When did those two come together?
So the two of those things converged when I went to my classes and I'm like, oh, I felt like I was at home. Like, it's such a beautiful and safe space. You know, the classes, the teachers, so engaging. And I'm like, oh, I could do this, but I don't want to teach. I'm very non-traditional. So I didn't want to teach in the traditional way. I said, listen, I can add this on because at that time I had begun writing curriculum. I had begun implementing the different curriculums that I had written on consent, body awareness. I wrote one for pre-K to 5. And I implemented that in a few schools and a few private daycares and different private schools, right? So I'm like, oh, this is fun. And people are receptive. Parents were coming up to me, thanking me for wanting me to talk about things that they were scared to death to talk to their children about. People telling me, even at work, he's like, I had a person tell me, and I taught in a school, I taught special education. And I had one of my coworkers come up to me. He said, my daughter's name is this, but she wants to be called that. And she told us that she's not a girl anymore. She's a boy. And I refused to call her that. And I'm like, what does it take from you for you to call her what she wants to be called? I said, what does it take from you to affirm her name? I said, does it take anything from you? I said, it doesn't. I said, but it takes something from her. I said, so if you're going to look at her heart, I said, that needs to be your focal point, not what she is manifesting, not what she is physically presenting to you. I said, if you just love on her, I said, the rest will come. I said, just be receptive and open and accepting. And he just came out of nowhere. Like we were, I don't know, doing math class, right? And he just came out of there with no, with, you know, just blurted it out. People tell me about their impotence at work, that they're cheating on their wives, that they, I had one coworker tell me that he was having a, he had a great night with a man and his wife the other day. This is at work now. We're in a school and he's going on about his tryst, right? Knowing he's safe, knowing that I'll never, right? So it was just a wild, it's wild. People tell me all kinds of stuff. So I'm just trying to tell you, it's fun, bro. It's fun. So I'm stuck here for life.
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah, I can see that you all right. So this I need to ask, because I always ask people if they come on, like if I have sex therapists or anything on the show, I always ask about sexual misconceptions. Gotta ask that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What is one of the biggest sexual misconceptions that you have to address with clients and with people?
I think that for women, I've never had an orgasm and I don't think that I can. I'm like, girl, let me tell you something. So trying to help women to understand their anatomy, their body, their needs. And it's always more about who they are, different things that they've experienced, or let's say that they haven't experienced, right? So a lot of times their lived experiences play into their inability to climax, or not even knowing what that looks like. I'm like, have you ever taken a mirror and looked and found your clitoris? Do you know where your vulva is? Do you know where this is? Do you know how far in your vagina goes? Like, these are natural, normal questions. I have these conversations with my kids, like, and they're just like, okay, mom, you know, I just make it normal, because I don't want to make it weird, right? So that's a huge misconception that I have people tell me about. Another one would be, oh goodness, that's one of the big ones, like huge. A lot of men come to me about erectile dysfunction and what that looks like, and you know, how can they work through that? And is it inevitable? No, it's not. Just like you might go to the eye doctor, and if you're 40 plus, they'll say, you know, you're going to need bifocals soon. It's inevitable. And you're like, is it? Maybe there is some macular degeneration going on in my eyeballs. But as far as sex is concerned, that doesn't have to be the case. So I help people with strategies that they can implement and use to help combat that. I tell people your biggest sex organ is your brain, right? So if you can get that thing in line with everything else, you will rule the world. So I teach people techniques and give them the education that they need so that they can really work through their own pleasure and their own, you know, sexuality, whatever that may look like for them.
So. All right. Well, I got, you know, I have to ask the question.
Do it.
Yeah. Okay. So what is one strategy that you would give a woman or the man who's with the woman, how he can help her to orgasm, to reach her? What is a tool? And I don't mean that literally.
Oh, I do.
Oh, do you? Yes. Okay. Oh, yes. All right. What can they do to help her receive satisfaction?
So the first thing I tell my clients, I say, listen, you have to know your own body. You have to know what each little part does. Get a mirror and look at your vagina. Look at your parts. Spread your legs. Look at your parts. See, touch your body. It's not gross. What's gross about it? Do you look at your elbow and you're like, ew, it's the nastiest. Oh God, look at my fingers. No, it's just another body part, right? So when we remove that shame, we can deal with some of that ignorance. I always tell people, stupid can't learn, but ignorance can learn, right? So if you're willing to learn, you're willing to look at your body, see what's going on. I tell people, get some sex toys, see what works. Look for things that have clitoral stimulation. Look for toys that have penetration and stimulation simultaneously, and play with that thing on your own, right? And now that you've learned, oh, I like that. Oh, I hate that. Now you're learning the intricacies of what stimulates you. Now bring your partner in. Guess what? It's playtime. It's story time. It's you're the student. I'm the teacher. Masturbate in front of them. Let them see what gets you going. What's interesting. Let him handle the toy, or let them, you know, play with the toy so they can understand your anatomy and what makes you go, what makes you go, not so much, you know? So now you're looking like, okay, now outside of see how to get your clitoris going, right? That's one way for you to receive an orgasm, right? The other way, and you say, listen, if you could do this with your tongue, you'd be the best lover ever. You see what this thing is doing? I need you to do that, right? Not there. Don't be afraid to educate them, right? But don't belittle them. Make sure that you're doing it in love. Make sure that your motivation is love. Not idiot, not there. That hurts. Like, no. Don't do that. And once he sees what works, and then say, listen, I'm going to try different things. What's wrong with trying, you know, different positions and things to see what feels good. I tell them, try the clitoral stimulation, then try with the penis, put that in and use the stimulator at the same time. See where you go with that, a little to the left, a little to the right, higher, lower, faster, deeper, or whatever you need to say. Don't be afraid of it. It's your body. No one's responsible for your pleasure but you. So don't tell me that he can't get you where you're going. That's your vagina. That's your clitoris. That's your walls. You work it out. You figure it out. If you don't know, how the hell are you going to tell anybody else what's going on? Can we talk? Okay, men, if you like that, say you like that. There's the area right between the anus and the balls. It's the perineum, and men love it. Okay, so if you're not afraid to put your tongue there and lick around on his balls, because they love the balls. Don't forget about the balls. If you're giving a blowjob, don't forget about the balls. You see them there. Play with them, lick them, love them, whatever you need to do. I know I'm stupid. Now you know, right? But there are videos, they're called sex smart videos, that is not pornography and will teach you, really educate you on the anatomy and the body and different things that you can do. You want to learn how to give a good blowjob? Sex smart videos are fabulous. You want to learn how to give good a cunnilingus, right? Watch a couple of videos. You don't need to watch porn to be educated. You really don't. And if you like porn, look, I tell you, you like it, I love it. But porn is not the gold standard, because first of all, those people are rehearsing, right? Those people are not authentic in their responses, because no one's going to say that being thrusted by four people at one time doesn't feel good. No, because they're trying to sell videos. So just be cognizant of where you search out your information and make it individual. Don't be afraid to talk to your partner about what you like. And if you don't feel comfortable talking about it in the bed, have a glass of wine. Talk about it over coffee and eggs. You know, when you stuck your tongue in my butt, I like that a lot. I'm going to need you to do that again. The last time you did so-and-so, you didn't have enough lube, and I'm going to need you to lube that thing up real good for me. So let them know, right? Because men don't mind being taught. They don't mind. You sit on a man's penis and tell him, I'm going to teach you some things. You will hear applause. You will hear, you know, fireworks go off. They'll just be so happy because, first of all, you're taking active interest in your own pleasure. And that's sexy as hell, right? Because you're taking ownership of what you want. You're going to show them what you need and what you want, and vice versa for the man. You like this? Do you like that? No, seriously. Do you like that? You feel me? Am I making sense to you? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you make sense. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. So, all right. Let's transition out of that. We might come back to that before we end. Let's get out of there. And just tell me about this podcast, you know, that you got going on here. What is it about? What is the name of it? You know what I'm saying? And what are you bringing on there?
So my podcast is called Sex Ed Disrupted. So what I do in my podcast is I do permanent damage to people's ignorance about sex and sexuality. I take topics that people don't readily talk about, especially in communities of color. So I talked in one of my episodes, I talked about sexual code switching. We talked about the black male and sexual and masculinity, right? We talk about different things, relationship issues. So I bring to light things that people want to know but are afraid to ask. And I also provide actionable strategies at the end of the podcast or throughout the podcast that people can implement, right? And it's for from ages 7 to 107, right? So everyone can benefit from it. If you have a penis or a vagina or both or half of one or you got rid of one, you are still a sexual being, right? So everyone can benefit from what they hear on my crazy podcast. And I'm on Budsprout, and I will be entering the Apple Market and Spotify and all of those good outlets as well.
Wow. All right. So let's talk about the African-American experience here, being that you brought it up, you know, because, we go on these, we go on these apps, which I'm not going to mention, and people, get and talk about these things. And, a lot of people don't know what they're talking about. I noticed that a lot of people don't know what they're talking about when they start talking about sexuality. So what is, what is one of the issues in the African-American community regarding sexuality that is problematic from the male side and from the female side?
So for the African-American, and let's just say people of color, what infiltrates our inability to be appropriately educated about sex and sexuality is our cultural proclivities and our religious proclivities, which inform the way in which we operate. So a lot of times people operate out of shame, right? Out of ignorance. And it's been informed by what they've been taught by or what they perceive that they have been taught about by religion and by their culture. So a lot of times it's taboo. You will not find a Black mom, or you will be hard pressed on every side to find a Black mom that you can walk up and say, "Mom, did you know that your clitoris has over 2000 nerve endings in it? And it's more than the penis. Mom, did you know that you can have an orgasm, multiple orgasms that last over 2 minutes? Mom, what? I wish you would." You can't. So there's a lot of the issue for men is the shame around having to feel hyper masculine, right? In a world in which in white westernized America, oftentimes the Black male is emasculinated, right? And has been historically. So we were kings and princes in Africa, right? But when we come to America, we're 3/8 of a man or 3/5 of a man, and we're not considered human. We're being traded with chattel, right? And we are demoralized and emasculinated, even so much so that sometimes we have been I forget what it's called, and I should not forget, but when they cut off your penis, they make eunuchs out of us, right? So just a way to subdue the Black male. So we're taking away his rights as a human, saying he's not a human. So those things go into the generation lines, and that becomes part of our rhetoric, part of our narrative, even if it wasn't something that you chose, it was chosen for you. So now we have to combat that. We're coming to America, we're being called boys, right? Grown men be calling boys and just treated like subhuman and less than. So now we're in a space where we're in the bedroom with they're in the bedroom with their wives, their partners, and they're feeling like they need to prove themselves because everywhere else in the world, I'm not being considered a whole man. I don't like the way I'm being treated. So sometimes Black men hypersexualize. They try to have sex with as many things moving, right? Because they have something to prove. And it's not necessarily that every man is like that. Sometimes men have been have experienced some kind of sexual trauma, and they're like, and maybe it was a same sex kind of sexual trauma, and they're like, "What I won't do is be gay. No one's going to make me gay. So I'm going to have sex with as many females as I possibly can to prove to myself and the world that I'm not gay. But if you're gay, that's okay too. Okay, let's just be clear. But what I'm saying to you is, there's a lot of things that have been told to us told to the Black male that need to be broken down as far as what his sexuality and what his role is as the male head in a relationship. So, and for women, it's owning your own sexuality and not being fearful, because there's so much shame around a woman having pleasure. So when you think historically, the woman's pleasure was never considered, right? And if a woman did enjoy sex, she was a whore. You're a whore. What? How dare you like your sex? How dare you like having sex? We have whole communities of color, you know, Black, Indian, different communities of color, where we're doing female castration. What are we doing? You're cutting her whole clitoris off at 8? Like, why? Because the intent is for her never to enjoy sex. She is the object of sexuality and pleasure for her husband. So her rights have been removed, even at a young age, right? So coming into the church, now we're using, you know, Black folks coming into, historically, after we came over from Africa, we're coming over and we're learning the Christianity as the way it was presented by white westernized America, even though Christianity started in Africa, but we're not going to talk about that, right? So you just try to give it back to us in a garbledygook kind of watered down, whitewashed way. So the way in which you interpreted it was that sex was shameful if it wasn't done. There's no pleasure talked about in the Bible, right? He laid with her, his wife, and became pregnant. Adam laid with Eve and she became pregnant. He knew his wife. He knew his wife. Was his wife having orgasms? Because you better believe he was, right? But none of that is ever talked about. And it's not condoned in the church. It's not spoken of. It's not condoned. You know, sex was just for procreation. It never said anything about pleasure, even though the whole book of Song of Songs is all about sex and freaky stuff. Okay. So if you think about it from those contexts, the way in which we have been informed states that women don't, there's no, why are you having fun? You slut, what are you trying to have fun for? So there's that shame. So it's about recreating narratives for people and letting them know this has been whitewashed. This narrative has been created for you, and you need to learn, own, and accept a new narrative that informs your sexuality and your pleasure.
I love it. Okay. All right, Leah, we got to keep on going, but we got to get ready to get up out of here. We got time constraints.
I understand.
I appreciate you coming on. Okay, so tell the people how they can get in touch with you.
So I am on social media, and my name, I have it trademarked. It's The Sexpert. So I'm Leah The Sexpert, and that is on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. I am Leah The Sexpert, and you can find me at leahthesexpert.com. I can be reached. I do speaking engagements. I do motivational speaking. I take private clients on for health and wellness. I also do webinars and seminars live as well, live in small group for corporate engagements. And I take private clients. I write curricula. I am working on, you know, different avenues as far as educating. I go into schools. So my new thing is going into school, not new thing, but my thing is going into schools to teach children about sexuality, bodily autonomy, consent. Huge, especially our LGBTQA community, underserved and underrepresented communities. So that's where I am, and that's how you can find me.
All right, Leah. All right, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That was Miss Leah Brown. She is the owner of Haven Consulting LLC. She has an MBA and she has an MED in sexuality education. And she is also a board certified health coach, practitioner, and motivational speaker, facilitator, and podcaster. I appreciate her coming on. I always appreciate when smart guests come on and talk about issues that need to be discussed. I encourage you guys to follow me on Instagram at Lewis_Morris_coaching for daily relationship tips and advice. Also, we have the Relationship Rescue Plan Workshop. It is available on the website. It is a 4-video set where we talk about everything from making your relationship with the creator better as a couple. Two, surprises and spontaneity in the relationship. If you want to get it, and I encourage you to get it, it is only $10. You can get it now for this special price, just $10. Go to the website, lewismorriscoaching.com. That's LouisMorris.com. And pick up the Relationship Rescue Plan Workshop for only $10 right now. And we would appreciate your support in that area. We also have the Heart Matters brand, which is available on Bonfire and Amazon. If you would like to get that, you can get it through my link on Instagram and Facebook, or you can just go to your browser and type in linktr.ee/Lewis Morris. That's linktr.ee/LouisMorris to get some of the Heart Matters brand apparel from Amazon or from Bonfire. I want to give a heads up. We are going to have the Relationship Rescue Plan open soon with me and my girlfriend, Kelly. We will be coaching couples in pre-marriage, before marriage coaching, and after marriage coaching. It will be a 6-week or 12-week program. We will give you the details as we put everything together on the website. I'm looking forward to that and working with her on a regular basis. Please like and share and subscribe to the Heart Matters podcast. And please help us as much as we can, as much as you can, so that we can continue to bring you good content that is beneficial. I thank you guys for all of your support, and I will speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Heart Matters podcast. For relationship, spiritual, coaching, and resources, go to the Heart Matters brand link tree, which is linktr.ee/LouisMorris. That's linktr.ee/LouisMorris. And we will see you again soon.